Hello, everybody. I'd like to call this meeting of the Oregon Board of Forestry together first establish that we have a quorum with a roll call. Nils Christofferson.
Here.
Cindy Deacon Williams.
Here.
Joe Justice.
Here.
Jim Kelly.
Here.
Brendan McComb.
Here.
Mike Rose.
Here.
And I'm Tom Imeson, so all members are present. We have a quorum. As usual, I want to remind people that this public meeting will be live streamed all day, so it would be helpful if you have them to silence your electronic devices for the duration of the meeting. I also want to note that this has also become fairly standard. pursuant to ORS 192-6602F&H, the board will meet in closed executive session beginning at 3:30 today. The purpose of the session will be to confer with legal counsel regarding information that is exempt by law from public inspection and the board's rights and duties related to current litigation or litigation likely to be filed. Representatives of the news media and designated staff shall be allowed to attend the executive session. All other members of the public are not allowed to join. We will adjourn this meeting directly after the executive session is done, so there's no need to come back into this room when we're done. Also, in order to ensure that the board has the opportunity to conduct all of the business on the agenda for its meetings, public comment for agenda topics, will be limited to no more than 30 minutes and received upon conclusion of the topic's presentation. A sign-up sheet is available for public comment on a first-come, first-served basis. For the private forest siskiyou topic today, we have scheduled a block of time for invited testimony from the board's advisory committees. In addition, there will be two 15-minute blocks of invited testimony from the two stakeholder groups who have regularly participated in the topic, and that will be followed by general public comment. To ensure that the general public has a fair opportunity to speak, we've requested that anyone participating in the invited comment refrain from using the public comment time as well. So now we'll proceed with the consent agenda. Is there a motion for approval of consent items A through D?
So moved.
It's been moved and seconded. Any discussion? All those in favor, please say aye.
Aye.
Any opposed? Motion carries. Those items are agreed to. And now we will go to the State Forester for his comments.
Thank you. Good morning, folks. I'm going to provide a neat brief update on current issues, which include our budget, Board of Forestry, strategic planning, science and policy workshop, governor's office, our federal forest work, the governor and the governor's council on wildfire response. Before I get started on the update, I do want to recognize some ODF employees. May 5th through the 11th was Public Service Recognition Week, an annual event dedicated to the contribution of public servants. Governor Brown hosted two special events to acknowledge exemplary state government employees, including several from ODF. On May 9th, she signed her annual State Employees Recognition Day proclamation. She was joined by a small group of state employees who were handpicked for their consistent positivity in the workplace. Al DeVoice, policy analyst in our federal incentives unit of the Partnership and Planning Program, is new to state service and was invited. And Wayne Auble, assistant district forest in Forest Grove with over 41 years of state service, represented ODF at the ceremonial signing. Later that day, she hosted a reception in Mahoney Hall for the 2019 Ambassadors of Public Service. Ambassadors of Public Service exemplify the values of integrity, accountability, excellence, and equity in their everyday work. ODF's Ambassadors of Public Service being recognized for promoting positivity in the workplace were Sherry Rose, Tracy Rolson, and Ola Book. So the events are kind of a welcome contrast to the kind of recognition public servants often get in this era where civility is lacking and the strategy of attacking public servants seem to be in vogue. So I just want to thank all of the stellar public servants we have working in ODF. I'm genuinely honored to be part of an organization that attracts and retains such dedicated, passionate people. So, So we have less than a month left in our legislative session, and ODF's budget and our harvest tax bill continue to generate a lot of discussion downtown. Both bills could be have hearings as early as next week, so we're getting towards the end. Generally, it looks like our budget will largely reflect current service level with some technical adjustments, but things are still in play. On positive note, it appears we'll get the necessary position adjustments to fully implement one of State Forest Division's largest business improvement projects. The division has been making strategic changes to the way it accomplishes its core business and priority initiatives to increase efficiency. And the position adjustments will allow the division to finish organizing its workforce around those business changes, resulting in a more nimble, efficient workforce. It also appears that we'll receive the necessary authorization to fully implement log sort sales in State Forest. Again, good news on the State Forest front. On the private forest side, you'll recall that the governor's recommended budget included a change to the current 60-40 split for of general fund and harvest tax revenues that cover the administration of the Forest Practice Act. Our harvest bill passed out of revenue earlier this week, and it maintains the 60-40 split. And fire protection funding has been getting a lot of attention in this session. On the positive side, we understand that our $6 million for severity resources will be included as a special purpose appropriation as usual. Other discussion includes inclusion of various enhancement packages around fire response and a potential fund shift to pay for them. We're in close communication and alignment with the governor's office on these proposals. So still stuff to see as the week plays out. As we look forward to the fall, I want to remind the board that we are reinitiating our two-year planning cycle with an assessment of forestry topics. So we will engage you at your September retreat. September meeting, sorry, with a review of values that Oregonians have for their forest and bring you information that shows you trends on a variety of resources. This meeting feeds into the board's October workshop, where the divisions will prepare and discuss two-year strategic plans. These plans or initiatives ultimately lead to board work plans and the development of policy option packages and legislative concepts for the 2021 legislative session. And I know it seems early, but we just get out of session and we're starting the two-year cycle over. I've been working with the executive team, and we plan to gauge your interest in revising the board's strategic plan, the Forestry Program of Oregon. And related to your strategic planning, we are planning to host a science workshop in November. This is the second day of your two-day meeting, and normally we've used it for a field tour. However, board members have been voicing a desire to have researchers present findings on a range of topics, so we decided to hold a science workshop instead of a board tour. We are framing the workshop in the context of the Forestry Program for Oregon, which has stated board values and goals and objectives for Oregon's forest. You know, all the natural resource issues being addressed today are complex. Our understanding of the issues and the information changes and evolves while we are trying to solve the problem. The issues and solutions are transdisciplinary in nature. There may be a paucity of data, and often we have conflicting results. The topics are emotionally charged, involve stakeholders with competing values, and there's a lot at stake. So our intention for the science workshop is to create a forum in which you can develop a common understanding among board members regarding how science can inform policy, the state of science on a range of policy topics, and the needs and challenges in making policy decisions in the context of incomplete knowledge and conflicting scientific results. We will invite scientists to speak on a broad overview of contemporary studies that can inform the range of policy issues being addressed by the board. So we just wanted to introduce that. We're working on it. We'll engage you, seeking your feedback really on sort of the workshop goals and desired outcomes and sort of the research themes that you want to cover. I mean, yeah, there's only so much we can cover in a day. So we also followed up with Jason Miner of the governor's office following the last board meeting. We appreciated the governor's support and leadership on the challenges and the opportunities that the department is currently facing. We discussed a number of topics about state forests. As Jason said, the HCP is a priority for the governor, as it is for us, and we emphasize the benefits of a lasting policy for managing state forests to achieve greatest permanent value. As you know, we continue to put significant resources into that project, working closely with our federal partners, a relationship that is core to a successful outcome. We'll stay aligned with the governor's office on this work. We also discussed our continued work to make business and operational improvements. And again, remember, this is a three-pronged approach to financial viability and increased conservation. So we talked about the HCP and the FMP with the governor's office. We were talking about business and operational improvements. As you know, as I said about our budget, some of this work is already completed and being implemented, such as diversifying our marketing practices, technological improvements, and changes in our organizational structure. But we also discussed other efficiency measures that may require statutory changes or support and leadership from the governor's office. As an example, we have an interest in consolidating our land base for efficiency, decreasing the number of scattered plots we have, and adding some particular Department of State land parcels that are important to conservation and financial viability. And so we started that discussion because that may require some legislative concept. We also discussed ideas for alternate sources of revenues. We agreed that with limited resources, we cannot currently provide focus and attention on these ideas, but we will continue to coordinate with the governor's office as to further develop ideas. And just to highlight some of the ideas we did discuss with the governor's office was wind energy. We've been approached over the number of years by companies that are interested in locating turbines on state forest, and we'd want to make sure the final decision was aligned with greatest permanent value, and we might need clarity on that. We brought up our recreational educational POP, you know, our REI POP. We've tried that before. It has repeatedly been unsuccessful, even getting into the governor's recommended budget, but we maintain our perspective that it's appropriate for public money to pay for public investments. Our estimate, last estimate, is we spend about $3.5 million a year on our recreation, education, and interpretation program. Although, and I do want to shout out and recognize the OHV user group, which has voluntarily contributed financially to help support that part of our program. We also discussed voluntary recreation user fees. Some other recreational groups have expressed interest in providing some financial contribution to help support other recreation. We heard the last board meeting from sports fishing guide Bob Reese around his watershed stamp idea. These efforts are going to require stakeholders engaging early with us and champion the necessary legislative concepts. And I'll remind folks that we are just starting that process now. So if you want to weigh in, now's the time to start reaching out to us. And then finally, we talked about the Tillamook restoration and the work we have around Swiss needlecast and aging alder on a significant portion of that. And, you know, how to address the fact that the share of revenue we get usually doesn't cover the cost of restoration. And it would have both positive outcomes for conservation and financial viability if we can identify other mechanisms to do that restoration work. Overall, we had a good conversation and alignment between ODF and the governor's office, and we welcome support and collaboration with our stakeholders. Just wanted to close that up. Moving on to our Federal Forest Restoration Program, Good Neighbor Authority and Shared Stewardship. We've been having some really great progress under those programs, and specifically our Good Neighbor Authority projects. We currently have a timber offering on the park timber sale just outside of Blue River in the McKenzie River watershed. Park is a 2 million board foot sale and will be our fifth Good Neighbor Authority sale. Bids on the sale will open on June 19th. The next two sales are back on the Fremont Wainema. It will be open before the close of the biennium, bringing our total GNA timber sales to 7. I know 7 may not sound like a lot, but going from 0 to 7 in 2 years is pretty good. And it's not the result of just one single program. It takes cross-divisional work to do GNA timber sales. And I'd like to commend the Federal Forest Restoration and State Forest Program and multiple field offices for their collaborative efforts to make all this happen. It's actually really nice, the Forest Service comments on how efficient and effective we are at doing timber sales, which is nice to hear. They think we're cheap. So we also have some exciting new component of our work. ODF was using state funds to contract NEPA analysis. And on May 22nd, the district ranger in the Chiloquin signed a decision notice on our first project. Miller Lake is a 3,000-acre insect and disease categorical exclusion. ODF worked with staff on the Fremont and Wainema to design the scope of work to meet the federal requirements. We solicited proposals and awarded the contract. The environmental analysis was completed in less than 6 months and cost just about $37 per acre. So really nice. Treatment will occur on all 3,000 acres, including commercial timber harvest. The Klamath Lake District is now working to break up this area into 5 different timber sales that we'll offer in the fall. And we have also 2 more smaller contract CEs in the work and will be completed by the end of the month. So a whole new business in getting more timber sales into the pipeline. And first success on that. That's really nice. So they're not the timber sales alone are not the end product of our GNA work. I want to be clear on that. While there's a lot of interest in the aspect of this work because it supports rural economies, timber sales provide revenue to get additional fuel reduction and restoration work done. In eastern Oregon and southeastern Oregon, there's over 2 million acres of fuel reduction that's approved through NEPA and lack adequate funding to get the work contracted. So we plan to use timber revenue to fund ongoing contract NEPA work, and we believe that we can complete an additional 5,000 acres per year on top of what the federal agencies will achieve. In some geographies like Western Oregon, timber volume and a value will allow us to operate this work without much state funds in the mix. But across much of eastern Oregon, we'll continue to invest the state dollars we have in our federal forest restoration to ensure work is done there. The Good Neighbor Authority is a good example of how shared stewardship gets implemented. Our shared stewardship agreement, we've talked about before, has been reviewed by the governor's office. Jason indicated it's a perfectly good document that reflects the intent of the governor and her office in working collaboratively with the Forest Service. So we've sent it off to Washington, D.C. for a final review and hopefully signing. They're talking end of June, early July for a signing ceremony around our shared stewardship agreement. We have a long history of collaboration with the Forest Service, fire protection, forest health, technical and financial assistance, landowner to landowners, urban and community forestry, and multiple monitoring and research projects. And our collaboration now really extends to the national forest system through our federal forest restoration, landscape scale restoration, joint chiefs, good neighbor authority, and shared stewardship is just a logical evolution of our relationship where states going to have more say in the management of federal forests. Our agreement calls for working together to create healthy and resilient forest ecosystems, vibrant local economies, healthy watersheds with functional aquatic habitat, and quality outdoor opportunities for all Oregonians. Those are the outcomes we want to focus on. It also describes operating principles, which includes an open, transparent, inclusive, and accountable process that will allow other interested parties, you know, for example, other federal agencies, tribes, state agencies, non-governmental organizations, or collaboratives to join in the shared stewardship agreement. So it's not signed and just between ODF and the Forest Service. It's open to anybody to join in. And it's also identified some themes to guide development of long-term strategies and prioritized investments, including an initial focus on fire-prone forests and ecosystems of eastern and southwestern Oregon, emphasizing restoration around communities at the highest risk of wildfire, and emphasizing communities at risk of losing wood processing infrastructure and or workforce, especially underserved communities in rural Oregon. So this shared stewardship agreement process also tiers to the mitigation committee work on the Wildfire Council, the Governor's Council on Wildfire Response. The committee's been charged with developing a prioritization map, an initial one, a similar project that's guiding Washington DNR's work in landscape scale restoration. So that's work's just started. I think they've had one committee meeting. The Governor's Council on Wildfire Response will hold its third meeting in Salem tomorrow. The Suppression Committee will be discussing policy proposals for three of its six topics: our fire insurance policy, fire protection on BLMs, and relationship with the Forest Service. They will also be introducing discussions of a jurisdiction which focuses on under and unprotected land in Oregon. And the next Suppression Committee will focus more on unprotected lands, funding options, and organizational capacities. With that, I'm going to turn it over to Nils for his thoughts on the work of the committee and the council, and then I'd be glad to answer any questions.
All right, thanks. And Joe, I don't know if you want to speak up too. You've been attending all this. So as the board liaison to that committee, I participated remotely in the second council meeting, or actually in person in the second council meeting and remotely in the first meeting of the mitigation committee. And it is still at that stage and sort of foundational setting work to tee up the work of various subcommittees or work groups on specific issues. And the Suppression Committee and the Adaptation and Recovery Committee have several working groups working through a variety of issues that Peter just referred to, as well as things like the Land Use Subcommittee, Human Health Subcommittee, and the Economic Recovery Subcommittee. And we'll be hearing more from those, the sort of the progress on that work tomorrow at the State of Oregon Library, where the meeting will be held. And the Mitigation Committee referenced a fair bit the State of Washington DNR's 20-year forest health strategy as a potential model that we might use to develop a similar type of planning document and priority setting document for eastern and southwestern Oregon to start with. And we're going to be digging a little bit deeper into that through the next couple months, with the hope that all of these groups have some recommendations prepared back for the governor's office and the legislature in the fall. I don't know if there's a lot more to report, except that it is, it is. In all of the years I've been involved in forestry in Oregon, it is a very impressive and diverse group of stakeholders that is participating in this effort. So that has also required more of that foundational setting work that we've done to date. But it's exciting to see that much interest across so many different sectors and both economic and social issues across Oregon that have come to the table to work on this issue.
So I just want to let the board know, I had the chance to attend the Forest Practice Advisory Committee meetings over the last couple of weeks. And great participation on those committees, and those committees are brought together to advise this board. They're made up of professionals that are actually out there working with the Act, actually working with the Forest Practice Act daily, a lot of expertise. I was really impressed with the participation. I thought staff did an excellent job reviewing what the board is working on, bringing them up to speed, getting feedback. So I want to commend Kyle and Margan and everybody that worked through that. I think they did a wonderful job and teeing up a lot of good conversation, a lot of good feedback from them. Real high interest out of those committees to assist the board and provide information to us. And I think the other kind of thing that I really felt was they felt the process is important that we go through. And that was kind of a theme that I both heard in the Eastern Oregon Committee and the Southwest and Northwest Combined Committee. So just want to let you know, I attended that meeting and very, very good, very good conversation. So.
Great. Thanks for doing that. Okay, we do have a public comment period. We have one person who signed up to testify on items that aren't on the agenda. And Claire, I'm sorry.
Yeah, I didn't have a question.
Oh, yeah, please.
So I just got back from a trip to Spain, which was rather nice. But the purpose of the trip was to participate in an international conference on trout and salmon. And I wanted to basically share with the board and those here that it was remarkable to me how many similar themes there were presented at that conference from folks all over the world, to many of them that we're grappling with here, specifically today. Certainly climate change and the impacts of climate change was one of the primary overriding themes that was either specifically the topic of conversation of a presentation or was an ancillary discussion. One of the primary things that is occurring worldwide is not only loss of species, and in fact the Sierra Nevada mountain systems in Spain have gone through a horrendous simplification of their biotic diversity as a result of climate change, but specifically with relevance to the topic we're going to be discussing today on aquatic systems, the impact on temperatures and flow are occurring worldwide, and the relationship to land management decisions on those temperatures and flows. One of the sort of things that once again hit me full in the face as a result of listening to these presentations is that systems worldwide, aquatic systems worldwide, basically work the same. And so that when we're looking for information on the relationship between land management and water temperature, there's a lot of information out there to learn and to assist us in facing the policy decision that we're dealing with. And I would encourage us all to raise our head out of the specific locality that we're going to be making decisions on both, you know, today and in future, and realize that all aquatic systems basically work the same way. There are some slight variations, but there is a lot of information available for us to ground our discussions in and learn from examples elsewhere, both good and bad, about how various folks have dealt with stuff. It was really fascinating, and I think, despite the fact that in some instances there is a paucity of information from a specific locality, if you raise your eyes up to the totality of the scientific information available, there are very few decisions that will come before this board where we will not have enough information upon which to base our decisions. We just need to be willing to embrace it. Thank you.
We do have two folks who have signed to testify at this time, Claire Clock and Asha Aiello.
Good morning, Chair Emerson and members of the board. I'm Claire Clock, systems ecologist from Corbett, Oregon. A few minutes ago, I made a comment, and I was concerned about the amount of clear cutting on both the coast and the Cascade Range in regard to flood control in the lower valleys and like that. And I was concerned about the amount of just primary or aerial cereal stage forest compared to mature and old growth forest. And I said I hadn't done the research and hadn't checked the acreages, but not more than about 15 minutes or an hour later, an industry spokesman stepped up here to testify that there's just not any mature, late, old mature and late cereal stage in private forest, which basically is my point. And so when we look at the general type of decisions that you make, we might want to consider that the state and the federal properties are the only place where we're going to have a mature and late cereal stage forest. And I'm not talking about just letting them go as they are. They need to be thinned properly. They need to be managed in that type of a habitat, and also to provide habitat for those species that are being squeezed into just a little spot in our landscape. Thank you.
Good morning, Chair. My name is Asha Aiello. I'm the Communications Director for the American Forest Resource Council. I also serve on the Elliott State Research Forest Advisory Board, as well as the Governor's Task Force on Outdoor Recreation. In contrast to my neighbor here, I'm actually here to speak a little bit about outdoor recreation and on the importance of active management in outdoor recreation in Oregon, especially as you approach the next 2 years in planning for new forest plans. Outdoor recreation doesn't exist without active management, and I can tell you that 700,000 Oregonians alone hunt and fish, so that's according to ODFW. That's just hunting and fishing. That's not stand-up paddleboarding. That's not kayaking. That's not hiking. That's not anything else. That's just hunting and fishing, and so you can imagine the impacts on outdoor recreation. It's important to the recreation community, I'm speaking mostly from the hunting and fishing, that active management, clear cutting, regeneration harvests, thinning, responsible logging, and responsible management is essential as we go forward on our state and federal lands, especially with the importance of the Good Neighbor Authority, as Peter spoke to earlier. This is really important, not just because of recreation, but also to our wildlife. And over the past 30 years, Oregon has seen a 33% decline in black-tailed deer. And there's a study on black-tailed deer habitat use done by ODFW on 40 collared does in the ALSI unit to determine habitat use. And the overwhelming majority of the collared transmissions showed dominant preferred habitat as early cereal or clear cut. And that's from 71,000 GPS transmissions. This is important not just because of our recreation, but also the economy of Oregon. From the Pew Charitable Trust, in 11 western states in 2016, public land resulted in 3.1 million hunting trips, 2.8 million fishing trips, 2.2 million viewing trips, wildlife viewing, generating more than 1 billion salaries and wages, supporting 26,500 jobs, and producing 421 million in federal, state, and local tax revenue. As you move forward with forest planning, as you move forward with Good Neighbor Authority, please consider that active management is not only responsible for wildlife and recreation, but also for a huge economic boom to our state. Thank you.
Okay,